from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. At the age of 49, writer and performer Sandra Tsing Lo's life turned upside down. She had an affair that ended her marriage, and her body and moods were changing wildly. In her new memoir, The Mad Woman and the Volvo, Lo chronicles the roller coaster year leading up to her 50th birthday and the perils and absurdities of trying to juggle work, young kids, and elderly parents, all while getting pummeled by menopause. Lo considers herself a member of Generation Triple M, middle-aged moms in menopause, and we'll talk to her about her book and the experiences of America's largest demographic group, middle-aged women. That's next on Forum, right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. And in the second hour, we'll be joined in studio by Sandra Tsing Lo, and she is a contributing editor of The Atlantic, host of the syndicated radio show The Lowdown on Science, and she's been a regular contributor to NPR's Morning Edition and PRI's This American Life, so she is no stranger to listeners of public radio. She now calls herself the Virgil to the literature of menopause and brings her writing talents to bear in a new book about menopause, her sixth, all about the change, titled The Mad Woman and the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Welcome, Sandra Tsing, to Forum. Glad to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here, Michael. Thank you.
I guess I want to begin by just talking about the fact that you are so out there. I mean, writing memoirs is one thing. I've done it, too. And it's always a challenge because suddenly you're making off in the private public, and you do this with a vengeance. I mean, you even talk about a love affair while you were married, a marriage coming apart, but also your hormones and your whole anatomical system, really. I mean, how has this affected just in general? Well, your relationship with other people. I mean, do you feel that they see you different, or do you think that they do actually see you differently?
Well, I mean, I've been on public radio and writing about my life, for better or worse, for like 15 years. So that became my stock and trade early on. In writing classes, I would try to write, you know, something from the point of view of a Cambodian soldier, you know, in the forest. But every time I tried to write fiction, it didn't ring quite as true as when it came out of my own voice. So in a way, the genre kind of chose me as a writer. And then over the years, I had, you know, with my other books, I was happily married and stable family situation, et cetera, et cetera. When this happened, it was a shock to me at 46 of just my life blew up. It was kind of like this curtain lifting where suddenly you realize instead of a person with a managed life, there's another person inside that has passion and drive and desire. And so when this thing blew up, I realized I could not continue living the lie of the persona I had made in my memoir.
So that other person had been hidden, concealed, not disclosed, or just the raging hormones brought her to the fore?
The raging hormones brought her to the fore, and I think that's what we try to do when we weave our families together and our home lives and our work lives together. It's like we see occasionally things passing of sort of a desire or a moment or something that we shouldn't be thinking about, and then it goes away. But in this case, it was like a second adolescence at 46. There was just this explosion of feeling and of kind of like, I'm going to grab my life now so that at 90 I'm not lying on my deathbed. And specifically, it was like the desire to fall in love and to be loved, that many of us kind of over the age of 45 go, I will never feel these things again. I'm done. But I have my good Merlot and my HBO series and my cat and my good latte and I'm fine. But if you have the chance to fall in love and to do that, you go, I'm going to go for it.
But this wasn't quite a mad passion. You described the relationship with the man you realized you were in love with as being sort of like Lucy and Ethel. I mean, it was really quite platonic, in fact, wasn't
it? Yes, for 10 years we were friends and we were both married and with children. And we were like affable best friends, almost like girls and sisters. Lucy to Ethel is correct. But it happened that we went, of course, in the book. It should be no strange. You know, people in San Francisco, they've heard of Burning Man. And it was this kind of women in their 40s becoming more volcanic and saying, I don't want to just have a birthday at my 40th when I go and have sushi with my girlfriends. Let's go to Burning Man for my 45th or my 50th to show I'm still a woman, I'm a rock and roller, I'm alive.
She also had a friend who revealed to you that she had an affair, and so that may have been a catalyst. What I was struck by in reading your book, though, was You read Tolstoy, A Day in the Life of Ivan Ilyich, you read Sandra Ting Lo, and it's A Day in the Life with a Hamster. I mean, what a catalyst. Explain that.
Well, at the opening of the book, I'm driving on the freeway going to pick up my kids from school, and it's an ordinary day. And then the first moment is I realize that I promised them we would have make your own pizza for dinner, which is this hideous creation that mothers have invented for their creative children where everybody makes their own, which is awful because it's a lot of cleanup. And I'm thinking about going to Trader Joe's mid-afternoon when they really don't have those good samples, and all the different kinds of ropey dough and the parking lots at Trader Joe's, they're always too small. And then suddenly I have this mood plummet where it's like when I put a gun to my head just thinking about like the bad samples at Trader Joe's. And I pull over to the side to collect myself. And suddenly I'm just weeping at 46 in my Volvo. And then I remember my kid's hamster that died. Well, I didn't realize it died, but suddenly in that moment, I realized it had still never come back from the vet, and it had been 3 months, and the hamster was dead. And it was like heaves of seawater, like Jonah's whale, when I thought the hamster's little face and its little innocent paws, and like mothers and pets have a really unique relationship also. And I felt this huge sadness and grief opening up within myself that could never be resolved. You know, the grief chasm opens and you're plummeting through that universe. And I go, I'm never going to get out of this.
And so the hormones raged. You fell in love. You write about your husband as X. You write about your lover as Y. It's a chromosomal type of triangle. And as a result, what seems to happen subsequently is all kinds of damage. Ultimately, you wind up in happily ever after with Ethel. what I was struck by as a reader in part was the kind of maiming of loved ones. I'm using your language now. Humiliation, a lot of ignominy, really, a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're asked this question many times. Is it worth it?
Well, it was a huge amount of damage, and I think there is – and it was sort of funny in the book that, you know, there is a moment – and actually there's a moment when we're kind of like hoping, okay, well, we've lived these parallel lives for a long time. We both had sort of those companionate marriages where – mom works, dad works, and they and parallel tracks. They parent the kids on parallel tracks. So you're almost like business partners or like co-presidents of your little family business. But then what happens is when that blows up, then you go, you know what? We had an affair for 4 months. Let's disclose to our families with a team of great therapists standing by. And they'll sort of manage everyone's reaction. And surely it's paid for by insurance. Like that they will sort of manage us and make us through this process. But the human heart is what it is. And so it was extraordinary sort of damage, and children were involved. And in fact, my, you know, married lover ended up 4 months later moving back home, breaking up and moving home, leaving me now.
You were the abandoned one.
But I couldn't really make that argument because I was the one that was guilty. But now I am, you know, it gets it shrinks. I'm now in a cabin, abandoned, out of my mind. It's kind of like I can't sleep at night. My children are going back and forth. In the Atlantic, I wrote this piece against marriage. Readers are just piling on, and the backlash is insane of like, you used to be a good writer. Now the pathetic side of this crazy woman lost in midlife. You shouldn't even be in the pages of the Atlantic. Why don't you edit her down? And it's just awful. And I can't sleep at night. And I wisely get a prescription for Ambien that I wisely pair with wine. And I wake up in the morning and I've slept.
You're lucky
on
you weren't sleepwalking with the Ambien.
Exactly. And my arm is like paralyzed on the right side. And it's just a complete train wreck for a long period of time.
Well, it does have a happy ending. But, you know, it was also, I mean, you describe it as a prison break from the marriage, which speaks for itself. But then, it's, you know, this has been how long now with Y?
Almost 6 years.
Yeah. And, you know, Beckett said it, habit's the great deadener. I mean, and your hormones have gone their way to some extent.
Yes, they have. Yes.
So here you are now, not necessarily looking for new adventures of this sort, back into kind of a good flow of life again. And talking to all of the women of your age in the 3M way about menopause. 3M, by the way, brought me back way back to Norman Mailer and Gore Vidal. You know, there was an article in New York Review of Books where Vidal accused Mailer of being murderous and misogynistic. Those were the 3Ms. But you've got menopause and
middle age and middle motherhood.
And mad woman too. Not the mad woman of Chaillot, but the mad woman in the Volvo. So you wanted to communicate a great deal about menopause, but as you say at one point, it's different for every woman, really.
It is. And some people go through it without experiencing anything. And then some people just it is sort of this traumatic, violent melting down where they feel they're going to kill their husband and their children. And the thing is, because of the timetable of my generation, which is a kind of young boomer, early Gen Xer, old Gen Xer, because we had our careers in our 20s and had our families in our 30s, I had my girls at 38 and 40 fairly late. In our 40s, when it hits, we are still in the middle of everything. We still have children, preteen and teen children in my case. We still have our elderly parents. My dad is now 93 to take care of, and the average age for a caregiver of elderly parents is a 51-year-old woman.
And can I just add that your dad is now happy with your career as opposed to when you were deciding to be a scientist?
It's only taken him like 30 or 40 years.
What do you say when you said you want to study liberal arts? That's like studying pole dancing?
Yeah, to a Chinese father, a career in liberal arts is like pole dancing. Exactly.
It's a very funny line.
Well, thank you. I thank you for quoting that. So I think that women, you know, this storm comes on very much at an age when women in ancient tribes, if they lived that long, could be sent to a cave to be by themselves. But here, these women who should be in caves, we are dealing with more and more people on our plate while working. And, you know, there's a statistic that the average full-time working mother today spends more time with her kids per week than an average 1950s stay-at-home mother. So parenting, it's mothering itself, is at such a high degree and so intense as we feed them, you know, locally grown organic food that we home cooked, slow cooked, of course. You don't forget the slow cooking, while having jobs and trying to be, you know, romantic wives. And it's too much.
It's also, you talk actually about the mad women, the generation before you.
Yes.
Play on Mad Men.
Absolutely.
You know, your mother's generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some pretty funny stuff about that generation with baby nurses and wet nurses and
sure.
The way you outline them sitting around with their cigarettes and their doctors smoking cigarettes.
While pregnant, of course. You have to have martinis and cigarettes to get yourself through the pregnancy.
But they were still throwing things, like Pyrex dishes, your mother's case. Suddenly this outbreak of hormones or these raging hormones.
Absolutely. Everybody remembered at the time. It was in suburban Southern California that our moms, you know, wore aprons in the kitchen and white pleated tennis skirts on the tennis court. And they wore lipstick and heels to go to, like, the butcher, because you had a butcher then. And that one day they're standing in the kitchen drying it, and suddenly they are hurling dishes and plates, and nobody knows why. Or they're hurling an entire leg of roast beef out the window, of roast lamb, I should say. And my mother, you know, at her 49th birthday, we gave her a Pyrex glass baking dish, and we thought it was so clever. She turned and hurled it against the wall, saying, "This is so cruel. You think of me as a baker." And then those moms would go to their bedrooms, close the curtains for hours, days, weeks. Some people, like, there's a friend of mine who said her mother went to bed for 4 years. And she came out occasionally. The kids could go in to softly play an instrument or leave. But the women had these epic meltdowns. And nobody really talked about what was happening. And that's all we knew. So that my generation, when we enter this phase, we have no wisdom or idea of what's going on.
No, but you know a lot about hormonal replacement. You know a lot about, you know, what is available to you in terms of things that your mother's generation had no ideas about.
We do. And there is some of that in antidepressants. I mean, but to a certain extent, we almost over-medicate ourselves a little bit because you have to sort of understand the unpinning culturally of where we at and are all the glue of things we're trying to hold together.
No, Ambien and champagne or what is it, Ambien and wine. And plus, you know, when you describe your own symptoms and you go through them, you know, the corns and the lower back pain and the low libido and
vaginal dryness.
All right. Dryness of all kinds. I mean, why do you call menopause a great adventure then?
Well, I think in the end, and it has to do with overall where I came at the end of this journey. You know, in 1900, our average lifespan was 48. Today, it can be 90 or beyond. So that instead of menopause being thought of as the change, you know, in a way, menopause can be thought of as the return, because that's when your hormone levels, you know, go back to where they were as a pre-adolescent with a little more you know, free testosterone. So in a way, it's like coming back to yourself. You can think about it as that narrative, because fertility is the change, as Christiane Northrup says. It's that middle section of life where the estrogen cloud came upon you and you started doing laundry and making sandwiches for people who didn't lift a finger for themselves. So if you think of it that way, and I think I've talked to a lot of women who, some people actually think it's the best time of their life. They go, it's a rebirth. It's a renaissance. I am free. And also there's a freedom in madness to say, you know what? Sometimes the only sane response to the world that we're in with its expectations upon us is to go mad and call it really what it is. And again, I go back to that notion that, you know, almost 50 years after Betty Friedan, it's women are not necessarily happier when they, you know, have longitudinal studies. In fact, the least happy tribe is not married men or married women. It's married mothers are the least happy right now, I think, because they just have so much on their plate and we feel we're failing at everything, including drinking only water and eating only kale and doing Pilates every day.
And the number of women depressed also, alas, is much and continues to exceed
yes.
the number of men, not only at this age,
absolutely.
But later on beyond menopause. We're talking to Sandra Tsing Lo, who is the author of The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones, and you are certainly going to be welcome to join us in conversation when we come to the half-hour mark, and I'm certain we'll hear from a lot of women in terms of their own experiences with what I can say probably incontrovertibly that you've had a lot of response from a lot of different women.
Oh, yes.
To put it mildly. But you have found your own Bible in this, and I wanted to talk about it. Like I said earlier, you're now the Virgil of menopausal literature, though I want to get a plug-in for my friend Lonnie Barback's book, The Change, which came out a number of years ago. The Wisdom of Menopause, it's a masterwork. I like your Jupiter and our solar system of menopause books, or our country's Our Gravity's Rainbow, because it's a tome. It's over 600 pages. So this is guidance. This is a beacon for women who have menopause. This is the book.
Yeah, and I think it's Christiane Northrup.
In addition to your book, of course.
But I hearken that. That really is the Bible. It is, of course, like about 700 pages, so not everybody is going to get through all of it. But what I love about this book, and she has a new edition out, and I want to say my quote is on the cover. Actually, they quote The Atlantic, where I say it's the Bible of menopause. And I think what is extraordinary about this book, it combines sort of two modes. She is the doctor on the cover in the sort of the pastel that you expect from a medical book. But inside, it's a lot more woo-woo. She actually is quoting an astrologer, Barbara Han Clow, in the middle. She mixes things up in an interesting way, Western medicine, Eastern medicine, Northern
and
Southern.
Let's back up a minute. What does astrology have to do with menopause?
Well, it's a passage of life that she quotes, and then I saw it through this book of, now, Michael, if you go to do only Western medicine, you'll go to a therapist and do talk therapy and talk about your mother. You will be advised to drink water and eat kale and do your vitamins and to have plenty of walks. So you'll get advice on that level that is more sort of medicating the topsoil. But there is this Eastern idea of, and I say I'm not sort of a woo-woo person, but sometimes the narratives that we look at in our lives can be interesting narratives and help us get sort of a perspective on where we might be. And this idea is that, you know, and is that at age 40, the kundalini starts rising and opening these chakras, right? Okay. But that
It
goes without saying. But why do so many people in their 40s crack up and go nuts? The traditional midlife crisis. It's kind of like they get divorced, they have their jobs, they lose their job. There's a lot of crisis and fiery stuff that happens in people's 40s.
So midlife crisis is, for most part, kind of hegemonically identified with men and has been for a long time.
It has been, but
that's
now
changing.
It has been because I think women, because they're a little bit more financially independent and they're in different kinds of marriages, exactly. Now you see really women go through this fire at this particular time. And so in Christiane Northrup's book, the thing is she says, for instance, that you can say you can have a doctor, you know, check your hormone levels, but because your hormones change constantly, hour by hour during the day, it's not as useful a picture as even giving a narrative of your moods as they went through the week and see where you were at, what was happening, because that can be an indicator of what was happening chemically inside your body as well. So I think the reason it's a 700-page book is that women's bodies are very different from each other, and hormones are chemicals, but they also affect our personality and our energy level and our mood and who we are. And sometimes you can actually bring down your panic levels if you sort of, you know, meditate and
say a little
mantra.
This gives whole new meaning to a guy coming out with a line, "What is your sign?" doesn't it?
No, it really does. So that's why it's that book is so big and so rich in its references.
There's also a lot in menopause in your book and in her book. Just dabbled a little in her book, but you know, about healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
Susan Sontag once said, you know, if you have a lifestyle, do you have a life? You know, it's a good question to ask. But you know, and you're joking about kale and all these things, yeah, and people talking about gluten until you know
the cows come home.
Exactly, and they never do come home. But I mean, the whole sense that I get in this is, how do women sort of move through all this? It gets us into the weeds a lot, you know, and it gets us into the woo-woo often. I mean, especially...
Yeah, and the reason that I think that when I looked at books on menopause, when I was going through this and trying to find help, you know, I always say on the cover, instead of the fanged Medusa head of a woman screaming at you that you might relate to menopause or perimenopause, there's always like a flower or a poppy or a stethoscope, which is not a good sign. It's written by a doctor, an RN. But I think the advice is always kind of like cut out alcohol, sugar, and caffeine, which is all some of us live for on a Monday morning, as I like to say, and just have water and kale and yoga and walk. So it's very much like a Finnish work camp of kind of hi-ho and organize your sock drawer and sing loudly and all will be well.
This will be in the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah. And that cannot be helpful. If you're so depressed you can't get out of bed, being told that you have to have a walk and have some kale is not going to get you out of bed, Michael. I can guarantee you that. But if you can have like a cheese sandwich and a burger and maybe a little Valium and a glass of wine later, you might be able to get out of bed.
Talking with Sandra Tsing Lo, her new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. And you've been talking about 45, but boy, when you hit 50, I mean, in your book you talk about, you know, getting rid of the in-laws in Cleveland, stuff at Barbara Ehrenreich. She was just on, you know, about all this nickel-dime stuff. I'm going to hire a cleaning lady and not care about anything. And you say, no shame. Suddenly you're 50 years old and you have no shame.
Yeah, yeah. And by that, I mean that, you know, as we're talking about, it's like whatever you need to do to get through this passage from women that I've heard about is kind of like if you need – yeah, and throw out the water and the kale. You know, if you need to do a past life reading or seance or tarot cards on your belly while running butter into your cheeks.
Have you done that, Sandra?
I have not done a past life reading. I haven't. But whatever you need, that was a moment that a friend of mine said, you know what? For the last 10 years, I've gone and seen my in-laws in Cleveland, but I've done it for 10, 15 years. I'm 50. I don't do that anymore. I don't like them. They don't like me. My husband can go. I don't need to. I'm going to stay here and watch HGTV and enjoy my life. I don't have to put up with those people anymore. So at 50, you can start, you know, you hire the cleaning lady and start writing the damn Christmas letter. Who needs those?
Sandra Tsing Lo writing about her life in Generation Triple N, middle-aged moms in menopause. And you may want to join this conversation. I suspect there are a lot of women who would like to go on record here or ask questions of Sandra, because she's done a lot of homework, actually. She was trained as a scientist. She still talks a lot about science, and there's a lot about the science of menopause in her book. And we do welcome your involvement in the program. So if you have questions or comments, join us now. Toll-free number 866-733-6786. Lines are open and available. And she'll be, by the way, at Joe's Pub in New York on the 19th of May, for those of you who happen to be listening to us in Manhattan or the environs around it. Our toll-free number, again, is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways to join this program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. And I have to tell you, and you're going to find this incredible, Sandra, I had a student named Brian Hong.
No.
Hand up.
Brian Hong.
Now, I don't want to get too inside here, but in her book, she speaks about waking up with the name Brian Hong in her head. She doesn't know where it came from. She didn't know anybody named Brian Hong. It's a mystery. We'll talk about this. I wish I could give you more illumination. Just had the student with that name many years ago. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Sandra Tsing Lo is our guest this hour at the age of 49, writer, performer. Her life turned upside down, and she had an affair that ended her marriage, and her body and moods were changing wildly. And she writes about all this in her new memoir, The Mad Woman in the Volvo, and chronicles the roller coaster year leading up to her 50th birthday and the perils and absurdities of trying to juggle work, young kids, and elderly parents while getting pummeled by menopause. We're talking to her about her book and experiences of America's largest demographic group, middle-aged women. Again, the book is called The Mad Woman and the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. And as you might expect, you're getting some strong responses here. So let me get your – I'll read two of them and get your response to the responses.
All right.
John asks, if the author were male, would there be as much sympathy for breaking marriage vows and going to Burning Man to show he is still alive?
That is an excellent – I love – that is an excellent question. And it's actually raised in the book of where male writers – I think that he makes an excellent point, especially in The Atlantic, where my editor, Ben Schwartz, kind of programmed us women. We were sort of his stable or harem, as I joke. But for us to write about our feelings and all that had happened. And it is not – and a male friend of mine who's an excellent essayist said, are you kidding me? You gals. He said, if I open the New York Times Sunday magazine one more day, see a woman complaining about her marriage. There was a big one about a woman complaining that her husband cooked, but he would take so long in the kitchen and use so many artisanal ingredients that she – and the men – And he said, are you kidding? I couldn't write that. And he said this final damning thing of, you know, he said, and you know, men can get married to a woman. She can have a baby, gain 50 pounds and never lose it. And if he were to say peep one about that, he would get so much blowback. So he can't. And I think that is a really
great point. So there is a double
point.
Standard.
Totally double
on
standard.
On the other side of what we usually
Absolutely. I agree totally.
Another listener, I don't know if you agree with this. 5 minutes into this interview, and Miss Lowe reveals that she was just out of control with regards to her turning 46, and somehow we should feel like this is normal. How about having a good behavior and not having to make the one last gasp of upset, all to prove that a near 50-year-old is really not as capable as the former self of 18 years old that she was, but somehow it's okay. Hogwash. The bad behavior of misbehaving middle-agers is like Walter White getting into the drug trade, all to right the wrongs of his youth that was the fault of his own character and thus destroying everyone around him. They leave a mess in the background, then claim it was something that they went through without fault. Middle-agers need to grow up. You're middle-age? Deal with it.
I love that, too. And I think the Breaking Bad, of course, I'm
I don't know if you see yourself as Walter White.
I totally do. And I think these are actually great. These are really interesting, great comments. And I think when Walter White, and it begins with him turning 50 at the beginning of Breaking Bad in his tidy whities, and it isn't until kind of the last frame of that he goes, you know what? I finally found something that I was good at and I had fun. And he finally tells the truth and the last minute of that, and that's when Skyler gives him a little bit of forgiveness because he finally told the truth for a moment about what he had done. And I think, you know, and I think that I would love to have coffee or wine or whatever with that person, because I think for myself in my own journey, it's like I used to be a lot more judgmental as a 20-something person, and I was very proud of the fact that I had been in this 20-year-long relationship living in Los Angeles. And I go, you know what? People who melt down, just toughen up and do it. But I think the more that I've come to see sort of the chaos of the human heart and these lives around me, where I've written this book, and people are now coming to me with all kinds of stories that they haven't told anyone, where I go, you know, that it's a mystery. People suffer so much and in life, and every day it's just to get out of bed and to have their day can be really difficult. So I've come to like appreciate anybody who can get out of bed in the morning, especially if they're a parent, and not put their head in the oven like Sylvia Plath. So I've become myself more – I used to judge people more, and now I know, you know what? It's the human life is – fragile, and people do what they have to do. And I think that, you know, in no way this was my having an affair in my marriage was morally wrong, and we paid for it.
But if someone comes to you and says, you inspired me to break up my marriage, to have an affair, whatever, you know, after reading your book, I felt, I'm 50, I have license from Sandra Singh Lowe, I want to follow my passion the way she did or whatever. How do you ingest that?
Well, I do. But what happened is a lot of marriages started breaking up. And that's why when people first heard I did this, it was that thing that you don't want to hear. It was kind of like the first black spot of ink of kind of like we all start looking at our marriages and a bunch of marriages broke up. Many of them stayed together too, I should say. And I don't know if it – but in some 1 out of 10 cases, it may have saved their life. You know, it like to get out of it. And 9 out of 10, it was a mess. But in the end, you know, when this first happened, my father, who at that time was in his 80s, I was getting so much hate mail, anger, and even though, and to a point that I was surprised, it was kind of like, it wasn't that I had serial affairs. I had been with someone for 20 years, had an affair for 4 months, instantly confessed and took the blowback, and then actually he moved back home. So it was like, it was many people like have had three marriages in that time, or they've had a bunch of, if that was the first and only thing that I ever did. But my father, who was in his 80s, I told him about, he was sitting on the beach and he just started laughing. And he said, everyone in our family has been divorced. I'm on my fourth wife. Welcome to the club. I'm going to have a swim. So he was like in his 80s. He didn't have really a judgment about it anymore because life is long and people go through a lot.
And we'll go to more. We'll go to our callers. Amy, you're first up here. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you so much for bringing out this topic, Sandra, for people to talk about. I remember my mother, when she was going through menopause, was telling me about all the embarrassment at work and taking off and on layers, and it was making her sort of hold herself in a little bit. So when my hot flashes started at work and I'd be making a presentation and sweat running down my face, I would acknowledge it and joke about it. And sometimes I was in front of a room full of all men at, you know, Oakland City Hall, and it was, you know, intense. So, but I thought it's so great to bring it out. And another survival strategy that I found with the night sweats was I got myself lots of sets of silky pajamas and just kind of made it this, like, fun thing. So I have to change a few times a night, but at least I got my silky pajamas.
And Amy, didn't you want to also talk about your husband going through cancer treatment?
Yeah, and so the big thing is my husband, as part of his treatment for prostate cancer, was put on Lupron. And Lupron, what it does is it changes the hormonal balance in men. And he pretty much was going through all the same menopausal symptoms that I was.
Wow.
Hot flashes, mood swings. One day, the endearing thing was one day when he turned to me and he said, do you ever feel like crying and you don't know why?
Oh,
you know, this could be, you know about Kavad, don't you? There are studies about various tribes, mostly Aboriginal tribes, where the husband will go through the pangs of pregnancy and birth almost mm-hmm. identical to what the wife has.
Oh, my God.
And so we were experiencing that, and it was actually a very beautiful thing that actually brought a lot of deepening to our relationship as we were able to discuss things in a different kind of way. And some of my friends at work, when I told them this, said, all men should have to take Lupron for 3 months just to know what it's like.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, there's a wonderful poem by Lucille Clifton where it's called Wishes for Sons. And she writes about wishing that her sons would be spotting and have to get a tampon. And you know, I mean, it's actually kind of cruel in a way, but she wants her sons to go through what she's been through. Let me thank Amy again and go to another caller. Nancy, hi, you're on.
Hi. I was listening to it, and it sounded like my life, except my life happened at 35. I was in a very unhappy marriage. In fact, I threw frozen chuck steaks at my ex-husband. That's how unhappy I was. And I met this guy who was visiting, and we became really, really good friends. I had an infant and a little girl, and we fell in love, or I fell in love, I guess maybe. He sort of fell in love, and I told my husband I was straight with him. I said, you know, I've got to leave you. I'm just really unhappy. I'm in love with somebody else. And I packed up the cats, the dogs, the kids, and moved to another house. And I wasn't even sure he was going to stay in the state, but I took that leap. And 38 years later, we're still together, and I didn't even think about what kind of effect it was going to have on the kids. I had a 2-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I was the first of my friends to, you know, to get divorced, and, you know, and they were saying, how can you do this and everything, but I did it. And, you know, I think back on those days, and I think, my God, I was absolutely crazy. You know, was that really me? But I guess in some ways it was.
Was it perimenopause, you think?
I don't know what it was. I was just...
Well, we're seeing things through a kind of endocrine lens here that maybe is... But Nancy, thank you. Thanks for calling and letting us know your story. We'll hear from some more listeners and some more stories. But did you ever get that... you write in your book about... Because we were talking in the last segment of Forum in the opening hour about public schools and how there's this gap where racial, teachers of color as opposed to students of color, big major index of a gap. You wanted to lead a public school revolution around this time, too.
Yeah, and in my previous book, Mother on Fire, that's when in my early 40s where I was, I got the religion of public school and caught the passion and the fire. And that was really the defining moment of my 40s. I was in L.A. and I had a five-year-old about to go to kindergarten. And I was trying to get her into a private school because, like, nobody goes to school in L.A. and the public schools are bad. And I had, again, another vision that came to me at a private school where they said, well, nobody goes to Los Angeles, school in Los Angeles. You know, 750,000 kids in it. It's so big. No one goes. You go, who is no one? 750,000 kids is not no one. And it came upon me. You know, I had that moment of seeing the light, and I became like the Joan of Arc of public schools, of like going, you know, the Jonathan
Kozel.
You start
speaking in different voices,
yeah,
like Joan of Arc?
Yeah, yeah, and Jonathan Kozel, or, you know, moment of like I go, my whole being was infused at wanting that there should be justice for every child. And I still feel that way, that an excellent public education is every kid's birthright. So that was sort of the initial, and I still feel that.
But still committed?
Absolutely still committed. And that was part of the big passion that started opening for me in my 40s of being universal and connected. Now it happened that, you know, also passion and romance fell into that bag. But it was from our public school rallying and renting RVs and learning to drive them that we actually went to Burning Man. So it totally came out of that.
And let me go to more of our callers. We'll bring a man into the conversation. Eric, that's you, huh?
Hello. Wow. Fantastic show. I can't believe it. I've been married three times. I've been divorced three times, married four times now. And every one of these divorces was around their mother being menopausal or my wife being menopausal. So I've been going through menopause for quite a while. I got to tell the truth. I know I'm a musician. I'm sitting in front of a recording studio. I got to go when I go to work. I know my songwriting partner is probably listening to this, so I got to tell the truth. But it's just been an unbelievable journey with these women, you know, and I've learned so much. The stuff you're saying, it's got to be very scary for a woman to go through this stuff. I've been through it with them, and it's just got to be so strange. My mother and father were both, they both were immigrants, and they had me when my father was in the war, and so I was born late, and my mother was going through menopause when I kind of met her when I was like, you know, 12 years old, when you start realizing your parents are just people. I just really appreciate your book. I'm going to go buy it, and I just wanted to say it's crazy stuff. I could tell stories all day, but...
Well, we thank you for the call, Eric, and it is indeed. I mean, it's not only because your body's changing, you feel like your mind is going nuts, too.
I mean,
it's pretty clear when he talks about crazy stuff. You write about Menopause the Musical?
Yeah.
I mean, that played into a little bit of your thinking, didn't it?
But I want to go back to something that he said that I think was so great about how scary it is for women and mothers of that. Yeah. And there is this fear when you look at your children and you hope they won't look into your eyes because they can tell, they will be able to tell that you don't love them anymore and you don't feel anything for them. And that is a really scary, when he talked about the scary moment that I can't do this job anymore and I can't deal with these people. So his touching on the scariness and the fear is good. Yeah, and Menopause the Musical I do talk about, and it has run forever. And
still
it
running,
is,
yeah.
It's still running, and it's kind of, when I went and saw it, it's kind of like women with the Barbara Bush hair fishtailing into the parking lots with their Oldsmobiles, and it is packed, and it is sort of like the 60s parodies of, like, instead of, you know, he used to be my guy, it's he used to be my thighs. And I laughed until I almost wet my pants. I felt ashamed because I wanted to do more important theater. But in fact, I laughed.
Emails. Here's a listener who writes, I am hanging on every word of your conversation, shocked by the parallels between Sandra's situation and my own, except for the fact that I identify my own shift as relating to the realization starting at age 40 that my future was truly finite. Until my 40s, my life had stretched before me limitless. But mortality, rather than menopause, was what hit me in my 40s and pushed me toward the feeling that I did need to be with the person that I was in love with. I am moving through the mess of my own life, and one thing that has been tremendously depressing has been the lack of solidarity and support from other women in my life. As I have gone crazy, as you put it, it's been very sad to me that so many women who I had thought were friends actually reveal themselves to have very little compassion for my situation, very little empathy, and to actually have zero concept of solidarity with a fellow woman in crisis. I wonder what you have experienced in that regard. I hope your experience has been less brutal than mine.
Oh, my God. When you were reading that, I had the opposite of a cold flash, a hot flash. I had a cold flash. It kind of totally went up my spine and remember exactly what she is saying.
So because, the difference between married friends and single friends? And
yeah, it totally blew up. And again, my dad was the most sympathetic. And even some men were sort of sympathetic. But, you know, I was surprised at how judgmental other women my age were in a really kind of searing way, married women. And they were telling me for sure I was destroying the lives of my children in a selfish way. And it was really surprising and shocking to a certain extent just how judgmental the women were. But to a certain extent, another perspective is to have sympathy on everybody who's trying white-knuckled to hold together what they desperately love and want to happen. So if you are holding together, you know, a family and children and a husband and a marriage with a lot of pressures on it where there's a sense I called sort of in the Oprah generation, it's not just that we are parenting and having children that you might read in like O magazine, and you must have date night and feel really sexy on that night. And if you can't bring that spark, you have failed. So there's a lot of stuff piled on our plates. And I totally relate to what that the caller is saying, because that you can get such judgment back. But usually when people have moved through it and they're either a little older or a little younger, it's often women just exactly your age that are hanging on so dearly that do not want to see you crack, because if you run and crack, they could make a different choice too, and it's tremendously frightening.
My guest again is Sandra Tsing Lo, and her book is The Mad Woman and the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. And let me read some more of your emails. Sarah writes, please talk about the discrimination involved with being a woman of menopausal age. I'm in my 40s and have not gone through the change yet, but if I'm even in a bad mood or feeling even slightly warm, my family starts questioning my hormonal status. I've also had experiences with several men in the workplace who have an obvious aversion to middle-aged women. I'm sure there must be some statistics on this.
Oh, well, and good.
Do you know what Dustin Hoffman did, and women poured out their love for him for doing this? Went viral. He talked about when he played the role of Tootsie. Yeah. And he decided, what would it be like to walk down the streets of Manhattan dressed as a woman? And suddenly, you know, he thought he'd be looked at, and nobody looked at him. He suddenly felt he was invisible. I mean, from being a celebrity, a major celebrity, to just not even being seen. And it gave him all this compassion and empathy for women at a certain age when they're not seen anymore.
That is a great, fantastic question. And you know, as we know, I think as you said, like women in middle age are America's largest demographic group between 40 and 60. There's 50 million of us. And by next year, 2015, almost 1 in 2 of all American women will be menopausal. 1 in 2. Half of us. So this is like the new reality. We're the largest swarm of menopausal women in history. So we've often defined ourselves as sort of less than men. Men are this, and how are we different from men? You know what? We can say we're the norm. How are you different from a menopausal woman? Because we're the norm now. And I think that it's just kind of like taking that power and defining it, you know, because menopausal women, they used to be dismissed. Now they're practically kind of running the world. They're setting European currencies and kind of like we might have a menopausal woman president in 2016. So it's kind of like taking back power with some sort of humor and some confidence and like going, well, the rest of you are going to be not like scared of us. And you know, as I say, you know, even in politics, touching on that, it used to be thought that estrogen was the problem, that a woman president was going to go crazy once a month and hit the button. That has never occurred in the history of men. But the problem has been testosterone. We've had many instances of some testosterone issues from our wonderfully misbehaving, like beautiful, promising politicians, that testosterone is a real liability. Estrogen isn't. So I think that we actually have to change the conversation. If you're going to look at estrogen, look at testosterone, and let's weigh everything evenly.
Well, let me just read a few more emails here. Again, along the lines before, Joe writes, if a guy goes through his midlife crisis and dumps his wife for a more exciting girlfriend, He feels more alive and free from the drudge of a dying marriage. He is a pig in all women's eyes and never hears the end of it. But if it's a woman and she writes a book about it, oh, let's all talk about it and celebrate it. Talk about a double standard. Neither is appropriate behavior for responsible adults. People can do whatever they want, but please, let's not glorify selfish, self-indulgent, destructive behavior just to sell a book. I don't think anybody's glorifying. Here's Victoria who writes, I have one word for Miss Lowe. Choice. We all have them, and when we make the wrong ones, for whatever reasons, menopause and all, you don't get to blame anyone else. However, you do have to deal with the consequences, menopause or not. Let me squeeze in another call here. Lynn, that's you. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. I hope that you can hear me. I first want to say thank you for bringing this topic out because it's such an important topic. I am a menopausal woman. I work in clinical nutrition. I'm a practitioner. I work with a lot of menopausal women, as do my colleagues. And I just wanted to say that the biochemistry piece of menopause is something that could be easily worked with and measured through neurotransmitter testing, which insurance, a lot of insurance pays for. And it really does a lot to help balance women's sleep, mood, quiet the hot flashes, and help them concentrate and focus and keep the kind of panic attacks and anxiety and depression from deepening and becoming so debilitating. And the therapy for that is primarily nutritional through amino acids. One of my colleagues is a great nurse practitioner named Mia London, who's written a book that talks about these things that's readily accessible through Amazon called The Female Brain Gone Insane.
Oh, yeah.
I just encourage people to read that book because they can get a lot of help in working through, you know, the issues that they're facing around menopause, but to be able to kind of maintain their sanity, which has been incredibly helpful for myself and some of the people that I've worked with. I just wanted to put that out.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did, Lynn, and I thank you for that. I want to put one other thing out here, a website comment from Steph. It says, many women come into their own at age 50. Marion Cunningham, Julia Child come to mind. Just wanted to say I'm enjoying the show about a person who admits to the deep, abiding messiness of human life. As much as society, culture, media, and family tell us that all of life can be dealt with humanely and rationally, love the image of the adulterous couple dropping the bomb on their spouses in a therapeutic office like that's going to take the edge off. I have to say that in my experience, it just ain't so. Bravo to Miss Lowe for taking a deep breath and making her grab for the brass ring. No one else will grab it for you. Cinderella stories to the contrary. Even more adulation for laying it all bare. Pain, mess, and more. It conveys something akin to life that's actually lived. And you're listening to Forum. We are talking to Sandra Tsing Lowe, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Joyce in Berkeley. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I just had a story about when I started feeling the symptoms of menopause about 2 weeks before my 50th birthday. It hit me like a ton of bricks. And I called the advice nurse to ask for some help. And I just thought it was hilarious that the one thing she recommended to me was, well, you know, try sleeping with an open-necked nightgown. And that was just hilarious because it's not like I sleep with a high-necked nightgown to begin with. And I just thought, who does? I mean, I don't know in my world. I don't know anybody who does. But
that is a hoot. That is funny.
That's hilarious.
Thank you for that choice.
Nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
But I also just want to say briefly that, you know, for me, menopause was a wake-up call that I have a body. And it made me get so much more in touch with what was going on with me because I was going through my 40s, you know, at 500 miles an hour, just trying to get everything done. And it really helped me to slow down and pay attention because I had to. So that's all.
Okay.
That's great.
Thank you for that call. On to another caller. Joe, join us. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. As I was telling your screener there, typically, and I know these things may be changing as women move into the workforce, but typically if a man in a conventional marriage finds a young girlfriend and wants to express himself, and then she finds out about it, you know, his punishment is paying alimony and, you know, moving from the house to some little apartment somewhere and pretty much, you know, financially being ruined. If a woman in a typical marriage gets a boyfriend and expresses herself that way, same punishment, the man still ends up paying the alimony and losing the house.
Well, except let me jump in here for a minute, Joe, because I've read a lot of Sandra's work. She actually made more money than her husband. She wrote an essay about women who make more than their husbands, but he's certainly got a point here, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So penalty for your actions?
A penalty, well, you know, you could say both things. In first, it's kind of like everything blew up. But in the end, to be totally honest, it's kind of like I've paid some family support. Our house has been split up, et cetera, et cetera. But the financial side of it, because I am independently, I work by myself, the financial side of it, I have managed and we take care of our kids. I mean, the emotional side and that part of it is still, you know, it's still something we're resonating with. But financially, it's not been that case.
Joe, we thank you for the call.
Absolutely.
A couple more emails. Angela writes, I'm 32, very pregnant, and with my second child. And let me tell you, the thought of menopause at this stage of my life sounds quite thrilling. My life as a mother is incredible, but the idea of using the restroom with the door closed and having the option to not visit my in-laws because I'm 50 and don't have to do that anymore seems like a dream. I'm looking forward to being a little reckless.
It's hilarious.
Michelle writes, I just want to thank Sandra for her willingness to bear the trials of menopause in an honest, open manner. As a 34-year-old type 2 bipolar working student, single mom to a 10-year-old, I am in the middle of the storm and know it will just get worse. Hearing that once I get to past the menopause stage, there will be light at the end of the tunnel is very encouraging. I only wanted to be a counterweight to all of the negativity she's heard over the years from her literary honesty, for her literary honesty. And thank you for showing us another possible reality so those of us who are not perfect can see that it will be okay.
It will be freedom.
Lisa writes, we have been writing a hilariously funny menopause blog for 3 years, One-Stop Menopause Shop, where hot babes go shopping, because we felt that women really needed great information, support, and products, but have found that women who could really benefit from this are embarrassed or in denial of becoming menopausal. There is so much emphasis on remaining youthful in our culture that women have no idea how great it is to move into their later years. I'm so glad that Ms. Lowe is bringing this out into the public eye. Matt writes, how'd your children come out of without damage? The statistics on children divorce are not pretty.
Well, there are statistics, but I think if you look down at those statistics, I came from a very middle-class and educated household. And if you look at our particular slice, you know, the children do well in school depending on the education of their parents. And so in a way, my generation of kids are almost like over-nurtured and over-cared for, et cetera, et cetera. Those statistics have to do with all economic classes. And it's definitely very tough if you're a poor woman of color who is raising kids by oneself. That really is terribly difficult in that particular time. So, you know, we could sit down and have a more wine or an Ambien and coffee and look at those statistics as how they shake out. But I'd say, you know, my kids are 12 and 13 and they seem to be alive and kicking. So we'll see.
Sandra Singh Lowe, her book, The Mad Woman and the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum, or let us know what you think about what you hear on forum or would like to hear by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our interns are Jack Detch, Marisa Endicott, Miriam Jamil, Hannah Rose Levy, and Audrey Gertz. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.